Support for this public radio podcast is provided by Cleveland Clinic, expanding globally and committed every day to providing innovative treatments and hope to patients worldwide. Online at clevelandclinic.org. And by Constellation Energy, a global provider of fuels, power, and energy services, committed to environmentally sound, energy-efficient, and sustainable energy solutions. Constellation Energy, the way energy works.
A wish before he goes.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Bill Gates has about 4 months left as chairman of Microsoft. One thing he'd really like to do before he leaves is get Congress to allow more skilled foreign workers into this country, people who might benefit Microsoft and other tech companies. Today, Gates will be on Capitol Hill testifying about H-1B visas. Nancy Marshall Genzer has more.
The federal government only doles out 65,000 H-1B visas per year. In 2007, all of the visas were snapped up the first day they were offered. Microsoft says it couldn't get visas for about a third of the people it wanted to hire last year. At an appearance in Canada last month, Gates called the immigration program a disaster.
If I could just change one law in the U.S., it would be this idea of, hey, let smart people come.
Standard & Poor's chief economist David Weiss says those smart people are in short supply.
We also in this country have a significant shortage in a lot of technically trained disciplines. We've been using foreign workers to fill up some of those holes.
Immigration critics say Gates should hire American workers, but Gates says there aren't enough qualified Americans. He's expected to tell Congress to invest more in math, science, and engineering education. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace.
Wall Street was downright giddy yesterday after the Fed swooped in with more money for the banking system. We'll see how long the good vibes last. Well, stocks aren't going anywhere this morning. So far, the Dow is up 1 point to 12,158. The NASDAQ is down 5, and the S&P 500 has dropped 2. In Asia today, stocks climbed almost 2%. European shares are about 1.5% higher so far. A noteworthy comment from the head of GE about the Middle East and Africa. In a letter to investors today, CEO Jeffrey Immelt said those markets are changing even faster than India and China. He said GE's revenues from the Middle East and Africa would reach $13 billion in 2 years. It was just half that 2 years ago. Immelt also said GE has no plans to sell NBC Universal, not before the Summer Olympics or after NBC has the broadcast. And in case you missed any of our broadcasts from Egypt last week or Dubai this week on our PM show, all of our Middle East coverage is at marketplace.org. This is the Morning Report for Wednesday, March 12th on Marketplace.org. Does this name ring a bell? The National Federation of Independent Businesses. I'll give you some hints. Harry and Louise TV ads. Hillary Clinton. Healthcare. The NFIB represents some 350,000 small businesses in this country. And as John Dimsdale reports, they're back.
This was covered under our old plan.
Yeah, that was a good one, wasn't it?
Remember the TV ads where Harry and Louise sat around their kitchen table criticizing the Clinton administration's managed competition plan for health care?
The government may force us to pick from a few health care plans designed by government bureaucrats.
Having choices we don't like is no choice at all.
Those ads were paid for in part by the NFIB. Today, the group launches a campaign to urge the federal government to try again. The Federation's president, Todd Stottlemyre, says health insurance premiums have risen 129% since 2000, and small businesses have reached the breaking point.
We think the momentum is very strong because the problem has just worsened considerably in the last 15 years. We think the time has come to take action now.
Stottlemyre says small businesses want access to larger insurance pools so risks can be spread and premiums reduced. Still, the group opposes the government mandates favored by presidential candidate Hillary Clinton. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
NBC and Fox launched their new joint website today. It's called Hulu.com. You can download more than 200 TV shows and movies for free. Lisa Napoli looks at Hulu's plan to make money.
Hulu.com may be a newfangled online venture with a funny name, but it's going to pay for itself the way broadcast TV has for years, with commercials. University of Southern California marketing professor Ken Wilber says, though, fewer ads than you'd get on TV.
Right now you can watch an entire 22-minute episode of The Simpsons with just a 10-second Taco Bell sponsorship at the beginning.
How that adds up for the network's bottom line isn't yet clear. But Forrester analyst James McQuivey says it's found money for an industry that's been running scared.
For broadcasters who, even as recently as 2 years ago, found themselves nervous that their television advertising model was going to die, and suddenly they're being reinvigorated, all because the internet experience is bringing new cash into their businesses.
And with a reported 10 billion videos watched all over the net during December alone, the small screen on your desk and in your hand could one day be as lucrative as the one in the living room. In Los Angeles, I'm Lisa Napoli for Marketplace.
Forget debit cards. The next big thing will be paying by fingerprint. It's called a biometric payment system. You slap down a fingerprint, use a PIN number, and that's all you need to buy something. About 10 Shell gas stations in Chicago have started using this system. Diantha Parker of Chicago Public Radio tried it out.
Shell's testing a system called Pay by Touch. It picked Chicago because a big supermarket chain here, Jewel, has it too. Jewel says it's found that once customers sign up to use the technology, they stick with it. And customers only have to register once to use the system anyplace else that has it. At Shell, you go into the station and enroll by registering two fingers. One is a spare in case of injury. The system takes your fingerprint and converts it into data points. They become an algorithm unique to you. That links to your financial information. Your touch and a 7-digit PIN, your phone number, activate the little screen out at the pump.
Just put in my phone number. One moment, please.
Cab driver Cesai Gebra Xavier was deciding whether to sign up and had a question.
I don't know how this technology will be working in cold ways, and I don't know if it's going to be affected with the temperature down or not.
Here's what the manager, Mohammed Ahmed, had to say.
Those things have a heater on them for the winter. I don't know if you notice it. If you put your finger, you can feel that it's warm.
Oh, let me see.
Yeah, just put your finger all the
way. Oh, it is kind of nice.
Yeah.
Pay by Touch is still a struggling startup company. Employees claim it owes them millions in back pay. And the company filed for Chapter 11 in December after laying off 250 people in the fall. Pay by Touch says customers like Shell are unaffected by these issues. But its biggest problem may be that other companies see profit in this technology, too. They could use it in everything from credit cards to cell phones. Here's analyst Jeremy Grant of the Stanford Equity Group.
It's really set off a food fight because you have both the banks and the mobile phone companies who are looking at this as a potential honeypot of new revenue.
Grant's betting that biometric phones will win out. The added advantage? If your phone is lost or stolen, no one can unlock it without your very own fingerprint. In Chicago, I'm Diantha Parker for Marketplace.
The most common definition of a recession is two straight quarters of negative GDP growth. Okay, but what exactly is in this gross domestic product? And does it accurately measure our economic progress? Some say no, it doesn't. There's a hearing in Washington about it today. Sam Eaton has more from our sustainability desk.
40 years ago, Senator Robert F. Kennedy argued that the GDP, then called gross national product, tells us everything about America except that which makes life worthwhile.
If we judge the United States of America by that, that gross national product counts air pollution and cigarette advertising and ambulances to clear our highways of carnage.
Even today, through the prism of GDP, a patient with cancer or the devastation of Hurricane Katrina is as economically beneficial as new jobs. Martin Collier of the Glaser Progress Foundation, which pushed for the hearing, says using GDP to measure the nation's progress can also steer it in the wrong direction.
You are what you measure, you get what you measure, and you fix what you measure.
Collier says by assessing factors like the growing income gap, pollution, and the effectiveness of healthcare along with GDP, lawmakers would have more incentive to fix those problems. In Los Angeles, I'm Sam Eaton for Marketplace.
So if GDP isn't the best measure of national progress, what is? Many social scientists are turning to happiness research. Commentator Will Wilkinson says we might want to think twice before we tamper with the idea of growth.
Everybody knows happiness can't be bought. We all know a family short on cash, but rich in love. And what good does a silk pillowcase do you if you're crying into it every night? But that doesn't mean wealth is irrelevant to happiness, does it? We all grasp the corrosive anxieties of poverty. Fretting over the rent, the next heating bill, a call from the collection agency, that's a recipe for misery. Money matters, and we know it, which is why we give to those without enough. It's tempting to think that there's a point at which money no longer matters, but according to the latest research on happiness, there isn't. Wealthier people tend to be happier. According to a 2006 Pew Research Center survey, Americans making over $100,000 a year were more than twice as likely to say that they are very happy than those making under $30,000. And wealthier countries tend to be happier than less wealthy ones. Economist Angus Deaton has found evidence from a new Gallup World Poll that a doubling of per capita income does about as much for the happiness of a relatively rich country as it does for a relatively poor one. Now, if you're forced to choose between a rewarding job and a lot of money, choose the rewarding job. Happiness research doesn't say you should aim to be wealthier. What it says is that if you hold everything else constant, the richness of your relationships, the joy of your work, a little more money tends to make us feel a little bit better. But the corollary for politics is that economic growth and public happiness tend to move in the same direction. The political choice to put a brake on growth is not the social equivalent of choosing a lower-paying but more meaningful job. It's the choice to make tens of millions of people slightly less happy than they otherwise might have been. Maybe something is worth that cost. I just can't imagine what it might be.
Will Wilkinson is a research fellow at the Cato Institute. We have a link to his blog on our website, marketplace.org, and you can share your thoughts with us there, too. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening, and enjoy your day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.